strongest climate actions that this nation has taken. But now, tomorrow, it's expected to be announced that they're repealing those standards, and that's going to set us back. It's going to cost consumers more money, and it's really going to stifle innovation and our ability to meet the moment and reduce climate emissions everywhere.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us, Gretchen Goldman, President and CEO of the Union of Concerned Scientists, speaking to us from Washington, D.C. A very happy birthday to Messiah Rhodes. On Monday, February 23rd, once again, Democracy Now! Will be celebrating our 30th anniversary at the historic Riverside Church here in New York City. Guests will include Angela Davis and Naomi Klein, Maria Ressa, the journalist who won the Nobel Peace Prize, Michael Stipe, the singer, the songwriter, the activist, the jazz legend Wynton Marsalis, the Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Mosab Abu-Toha, the renowned playwright Hooray for the Riffraff, and so many more. Go to democracynow.org for details and to get tickets. The seats are filling up fast. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. It's great to be back in cold New York. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. This month's nominating committee meeting will be held on Thursday, February 12th at 5 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Visit our website to verify if the meeting is being held.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Jacqueline Keeler.
If you're seeking respect and attention, if you're in need of a gig that'll help you feel big, come with me and put some folks in detention. Just last week was kind of rough. I put a kid in cuffs and zip-tied a woman to a van. We can sneak around town hunting working folks down. I hear they get a great benefit plan. Join ICE, boy, ain't it nice. Join ICE, take my advice. If you're lacking control and authority, come with me and hunt down minorities. Join ICE. Well, I failed the academy. The cops weren't having me. The army didn't sound that fun. So I found me a paramilitary operation that was keen to hand me a gun. See, I got picked on in school. I never felt that cool. There's a hole in my soul that just rages. All the women turned me down. They told me I was a clown. Well, won't you look at me now? I'm putting folks in cages. At ICE, they got great hours. Join ICE for respect and power. They got a sign-on bonus of 50 grand. They're in need of you needing to feel like a man. Join ICE. Join ICE.
Good morning. This is Jacqueline Keeler, and you're listening to KBOO's Talk Radio. This is my show called E Pluribus Unum, and today we are discussing the Epstein files. And what's been released. I'm sure that maybe you've been following that throughout the week. And we're looking at the sort of the Epstein files and the architecture of elite impunity. I think that's what we've been seeing in these files, and in sort of a redacted story of America. So, I did write about this week, yesterday on my Substack, Jacqueline Keeler, I described it as the American story as the grand violent fiction we are all forced to inhabit. And I think that this recent release of more Epstein files, millions, is really putting together that picture for us in ways that we probably never thought were quite as terrible as it is. It's of course a story that's currently being edited in real time by the Department of Justice, right? Bondi and her team, a department that claims to be our protector, right? That's supposed to be protecting the people. And looking at this huge mountain of data that's coming out of the Epstein files, over 3.5 million pages, it's really telling what her department decided to keep hidden. And I don't know if you also saw that that apparently over about 1 million, Trump has mentioned 1 million times in these files out of over 3 million. So quite a lot. I don't know if that's probably multiple times in different pages, but quite a lot. So, my Substack, my latest newsletter on Substack is called Redacted Billionaires and the Seeding of Zorro Ranch on Native Land. And we'll get more into Zorro Ranch and how it's how Native people in New Mexico are responding to this. Realization that this pedophile, was operating in their midst, I think between three pueblos in New Mexico, and the leaders and the tribes were never told, were never notified that he was had been convicted of SA with children, and the governors, pueblo leaders are called governors. Are demanding accountability from the state for that. So the state actually told Epstein that he did not have to register as a sex offender because it was a felony at the state level in Florida. Can you believe that? Yeah. So, of course, he had many dealings with former Governor Bill Richardson and had actually purchased the ranch from another former New Mexico governor, Bruce King. And so I used to live in New Mexico. I actually did advocate for the Navajo Nation at the state legislature for different bills because I was working as a community organizer in Navajo, Pueblo, and Hopi communities at the time. So that's another lifetime ago when I did that. So, but you can call in here. The number here is 503-231-8187, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on all this. This is pretty unprecedented in American history. I can't recall anything quite like this before. Let me know if you could think of something similar. And let me know what you think. What are you thinking about the ruling class, the elite in America, and how does that color your perceptions of our place in it, ordinary people's place in it, and our rights, right? And so once again, love to hear your thoughts on this. I'm calling this the Architecture of Impunity. And the number, again, is 503-231-8187. And so take a look first at our man in the Oval Office, right, Mr. Trump, and the monster and the president, or maybe the monster and the monster. For years, he's played both sides, wishing Ghislaine Maxwell well and calling her a nice woman. But new files that have been released include a 2006 FBI summary that pretty much blows that narrative apart, right? Back then, he repeatedly called, there's a notation by a police chief that he repeatedly called the Palm Beach police to praise them for going after Epstein, calling him a monster and Maxwell an evil operative, right? So an evil person. So it's very different from what he's been saying now, and it makes it very clear that he knew what was going on. He said that everybody knew in New York City what they were doing, and so this puts a lie to his claim that he didn't know, right? He knew, and why didn't he contact them before they began the investigation if he knew these things, right? He knew who they were 20 years ago, and yet he stayed polite for two decades, right? This is a horrific example of gaslighting of the public, of us, of, you know, he wasn't looking out for our children. He wasn't saying anything publicly if he knew he should have, right? But this is starting to have an impact on his own impunity. His Teflon Don is what they call him. His approval has been going down. It hit a record low of 38% in the latest NPR Marist polls. And now he's facing a full-blown mutiny. So the president is lashing out at what he calls the six Dems, right? Veterans like Kristi Holohan, Jason Crow, and Alyssa Slotkin. These lawmakers, along with Senator Mark Kelly, have been explicitly telling military leadership they do not have to obey illegal orders. Just yesterday, a grand jury in D.C. refused to indict these six for interfering with military discipline, quote unquote. That's what they're trying to indict them for. And this was a stunning rebuke of Trump from regular citizens, right? Members of the who were asked to the grand jury. So, once again, today is February 11th, 2026, and for the last few weeks, we have been basically drowning in the Epstein files. Over 3 million pages of data released under the Transparency Act. But, you know, I feel, particularly as a Native woman, I don't just see these files as a scandal, right? I see them as a map of the architecture of elite impunity and of settler colonialism. I definitely see the law as often just something built to protect the powerful and a fence that keeps the rest of us out, you know, like just like his ranch did in New Mexico. And we are going to, so please do call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. I'd love to hear your thoughts on these revelations, and they are ongoing revelations as people go through these documents, right? And as now members of Congress are able to go in and view them unredacted, we're going to get more and more revelations, and particularly, you know, the redacted items. I'm seeing more reports, even of emails that were redacted by the, I think a lot of them were already redacted by the FBI or before the Department of Justice got them, and of emails showing that they were definitely trafficking in women, young women and girls. And so, again, so are we seeing transparency? Is this ever going to be transparency, or is this just a controlled operation, a revelation? Again, could you call in? The number here is 503-231-8187. So let's get back to, Trump did lose a massive vote against what he calls the six Dems. Three Republicans crossed over, and that has been really good, I think. And there is, actually, I think it was a procedural vote. They're not going to extend his tariff, so he is losing ground there. So let's discuss the unredacted names. I think many of you may have seen that both Massey and Ro Khanna have been talking to the press and of what they saw when they went in to read the unredacted files at the DOJ this week. In just 2 hours, they found six men whose names were, quote, improperly hidden, right? And under how the law was written that they had got passed, they passed. So yesterday, Khanna, Representative Khanna, actually read those names into the congressional record, right? And these names include Les Wexner, Sultan Ahmed bin Sulayem, Salvator Nurar, Zarab Rikolodze, Leonik Leonov, and Niccolo Caputo. Right? And Wexner, of course, is the billionaire behind Victoria's Secret, and was actually labeled a co-conspirator in a 2019 FBI document. This document had also been redacted, it's well known that for a lot of Epstein's career, Lex Wexner was pretty much his sole client, right? And Wexner had done very unusual things, giving him power of attorney, so when he had very little experience, gifted him the huge mansion that he has in New York City. I think it's the largest personal residence in New York City. I think he expanded to over 50,000 square feet, right, of space. And also he gifted him the jet, the Lolita Express. And so that's, he had a huge role in making making Epstein what he became, which was this fabled financier, right? And with these amazing places that he could host and conduct these very questionable activities. So what is that? Maybe some of you have some speculation about what is Wexner's role in this, and why would he do this? Why would he hand over his power of attorney to someone like Epstein, someone who had very little experience, who was not particularly talented or special, but give all this to him and give him all this wealth, the trappings of wealth, right? And here you see that a situation in which the state is blind to the crimes of the elite. And this isn't just right now under Bondi, right? It's also been ongoing for decades now. And many times they could have done something and they turned away. And even in the Biden administration, they didn't really pursue this the way they should have. The Trump administration's extreme version of that, with the FBI saying that, that there is no indication that that basically Epstein operated alone, right? There were no other co-conspirators, and of course, their own unredacted findings, reports, and such definitely show that is not true, right? But yet, at the same time, Trump is leading an administration and a government that is policing the rest of us at a level that is, of course, autocratic, authoritarian, and incredibly dangerous and scary. And so if you want to discuss these co-conspirators or have questions, please do call the studio. The number here is 503-231-8187. And then I also wanted to look more carefully at another co-conspirator, which is the Sultan, right? Sultan bin Sulayem. I'm going to discuss aspects of this which I think have not been discussed very much, and particularly because it's from a Native perspective, right? And I did go through some of the files and did a search for tribes to see if there were any tribes that were involved and or mentioned. I know there's other things I need to search for in doing that, and I will, but I think the Sultan is obviously an incredibly predatory man. And we see an email where Epstein writes to him, "I loved the torture video," right? We don't know what that means. We haven't seen the video. But in the context of all of these emails, of all of these documents, it does not seem like a good thing. And we see the Sultan complaining that a girl trafficked from Moldova was a disappointment because she was, quote, too short, right? And then there is another detail which hits home for me as a Native woman, is that Epstein in an email seemed to indicate that that he was looking at in Indian reservations to escape the reach of the law, right? Thinking he could bypass federal oversight on our lands, viewing them really, as I described in my newsletter on Substack, as extra legal zones where he could commit crimes, right? And that is very, very scary. I mean, there is a history I've written before about the missing and murdered Indigenous women issue and the way in which there is a jurisdictional gap on reservations. And I've discussed here on KABU before how, as a tribal citizen, I'm not as protected if I was living on reservation land, any reservation in the country, because they're all under the same Indian federal law. And so because there is no clear who is in charge of certain prosecutions, including rape, right? Most tribal courts do not have jurisdiction over non-tribal citizens. So they have jurisdiction over anyone who in the country who's enrolled in any federally recognized tribe, right? But they do not have jurisdiction over non-tribal citizens. That's most Americans, right? And so they know in the prison system that they can go to reservation land and rape and murder with impunity, right? And they do that. And so this is one of the reasons for this issue of why so many Native women go missing and murdered. And so, as I mentioned before, the ranch was located between three different pueblos. Pueblos are what they call tribes in some of these tribes in New Mexico. And it was more sort of a sort of a village situation. And so the Spaniards call them pueblos. And so, and it's just been a source of real, there's been attempts to address it through the Violence Against Women's Act. Bernie Sanders was very instrumental in getting an amendment passed, I think back in 2015, to basically begin the process of where tribes could get trained and authorized to have jurisdiction on a very limited set of issues about violence, mostly domestic violence, right, of non-tribal citizens. And so, of course, the Republicans fought this for years. I think it was actually passed in 2013, but not actually, the Republicans fought it for 2 years, so it did not actually become active until 2015. This notion that, why do tribes have sovereignty over me? I don't have a vote there. How dare they? But yeah, you know, you go to any country, other country, and tribes are domestic nations and domestic dependent nations, as they are called in Indian federal law. And go anywhere, and you can't vote there in another country, but you're still subject to their laws. I mean, and can be tried in their courts. And so, unless of course you're a diplomat and enjoy some kind of diplomatic immunity, but you are still subject to their laws. And so this has been a huge gap in the law in which Native women can become victimized and have no recourse to justice. And a study done around the time of VAWA being amended found that with the FBI, which does have jurisdiction, as you saw in the Martin Scorsese film about women who were being women of the Osage tribe who were being murdered for their oil head rights, mineral rights in Oklahoma. And actually was one of the reasons why the FBI was founded, interestingly enough, but they are the only ones who have jurisdiction over those issues, what they call certain violent acts can only be tried by the FBI, not by tribal courts. And they declined to investigate in the vast majority of these cases. So there is no recourse to justice for Native women and other tribal citizens who have been victims of violence and even murder by non-tribal citizens. So you can see why Epstein discussing Indian reservations is as a place to enact his horrific operation is very concerning to me as a Native woman. Right. and also concerning two tribal leaders in New Mexico. And I go into that in deeper analysis in my Substack. But let's go deeper into what was actually in those emails, right, between Epstein and Sultan Ahmed bin Salim, who is a Dubai, very powerful man in Dubai, and he's the DP World CEO, and Neil controls huge amounts of money. And when Representative Massey and Connett saw those unredacted files, they saw him. He was there, right? And a truly predatory person, right? And we now have the text of an email from April 24, 2009. Epstein writes to the Sultan, "Where are you? Are you okay? I loved the torture video," right? And so think about that. While the Sultan was helping Epstein hide the purchase of his second island, Great St. James, they were swapping videos of what Epstein called, quote-unquote, torture. And the misogyny in these exchanges is pretty clinical. Another thread, the Sultan complains to Epstein that a girl brought to him from Moldova, as I mentioned before, was a big disappointment, quote-unquote, because she wasn't as attractive as her photo, saying she was too short and skinny. And this is the human trafficking reality that the FBI was trying to downplay in their internal memos. They called it recruitment. But when you are treating human beings like Amazon returns because they don't match a Photoshop profile, that is trafficking. So we have a caller, and let's see here. And it's Paul Rowland. Paul, you're on the air. Welcome back.
Hi, Jackie. How's it going?
Hi. Good.
So I had to call in because I've been following closely this whole Epstein thing. I hate to get you off the Sultan. I was actually trying to look up his name in this book I've been reading called One Nation Under Blackmail, The Sordid Union Between Intelligence and Organized Crime That Gave Rise to Jeffrey Epstein, which I think is, from what I can see, it's Whitney Webb.
Okay.
Who's an independent sleuth, seems to do a lot of her research on the net, because now you can, at least that's my assumption, is that now you can find so much information, there's so much information on the web, that if you're really good on the web, you can actually make, because there's so much public stuff that's publicly available that people don't even know about, that you can make all these interconnections. I think that's, she's read a lot of stuff too. It's extremely footnoted. There's hundreds, if not thousands, of footnotes.
Wow.
Anyway, you've raised a lot of threads, and I don't want to totally hijack your show, but
no.
I really think that this is, especially, you know, given what's, obviously given what's coming out here and what's the small, relatively small percentage that's actually been able to come out, given the redactions and the withholding of information and everything else, there's still incredible amount that we're seeing. But in the UK, there's actually powerful people are falling, as opposed to whatever the Commerce Secretary's name is. I can't remember, Lutner or whatever.
Lutnick. Yeah, we're going to discuss. Lutnick. I'm going to discuss that a little bit. Yeah.
Who should?
Yeah, Lord Adelson is calling.
Who is equivalent to the UK ambassador to Washington that had to resign, and probably Keir Starmer's, almost certainly his government. He's going to have to resign. There's other major figures in European politics who've fallen, but for some reason, there still seems to be this impunity. Anyway, just to give people a flavor, it's actually a publishing house outside of Eugene called Trine Day in Walterville, Oregon. That you can get. I happen to find this at Powell's, but it's really a difficult read because there's so much data. Anyway, before I get off to lay out the argument, which is that going back to pre-World War II and the rise of organized crime, Jewish, Italian, Irish in the United States, that they ended up, and the beginnings of the intelligence in World War II with the Office of Strategic Services, they joined together through figures like Lucky Luciano with the mob to help secure the docks in New York, New Jersey, and then help with the invasion
of Sicily. I read another book about this as well. There's been a really great book about how the mafia joined in with the to help the U.S. during World War II. I can't remember the title right now, but that's a really amazing part of history. Yeah.
So basically, they've got in bed, and they've been in bed ever since. You know, you look through all these through lines, like the Iran-Contra affair, and running cocaine, running opium from the Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War, probably before, et cetera, et cetera. There's been this through line, and they started like with figures like Roy Cohn and his connection with J. Edgar Hoover. They developed this strategy of honey traps, basically entrapping other powerful people in these sex rings, and then having all this dirt on them to make them open to blackmail, and that's been a strategy, and that Jeffrey Epstein basically just followed up on that. I mean, he basically was nothing. He had no degree. He was actually hired by William Barr's father to teach at that elite private school in New York. He had connections to Maxwell, who ended up being crucial in the looting of the Soviet Union as it fell apart, and got much of his wealth there. It's a really dense, complicated story, but you have to go back. You know, there's these through lines through history, and Epstein is kind of became this key figure in that whole nexus.
Yeah,
that's the best I can do.
That is definitely something I've been researching a lot. I just read a whole thing on Maxwell and his ties to Israel, beginning actually in World War II with the British intelligence, and then of course he rather opportunistically, worked with other groups and became a major sort of a go-between between the Soviet Union and Israel and other Eastern Bloc countries, including Czechoslovakia, Czech Republic, where he was from. But it's a really interesting history, but it definitely has led to the situation where we are now, where we're seeing all these things coming out and just beginning to get, which is what we're discussing this hour, which is really the whole, what this framework that we're seeing of power, right, and the impunity of it, it really is, puts a different flavor to our own lives as Americans today, what it means for us and what it means for, and why we're in this situation where we're seeing, this growing authoritarianism and the way Trump is able to, to act with impunity. And so, that's definitely, there's amazing books on all that. And I could do whole shows on each book I've read on those issues. But that operation that you are discussing is called Operation Underworld, that happened during World War II, which involved both the mafia, Italian-American mafia, and Jewish organized crime figures. Actually, I think the book that I read was actually more about the Jewish organized crime aspect of it. But Meyer Lansky and the Jewish mob helped rid America of Nazis before World War II. And so, that was... pretty interesting to find out, and they were, of course, they went around beating up members of the fascist German American Bund, and stuff, and really sort of striking out against fascism. I'm just, of course, which Trump's father in the 1920s was on the other side of, right? He was marching with the Nazis and stuff like that. So
he was apparently arrested at a Klan rally.
Given
Trump's recent meme about the Obamas, I mean, the guy's a Klansman. I mean, it's really shocking to to think that after all the struggles that this country, the people have gone through, that we end up with a Klansman, a racist, charlatan Klansman in bed with the mafia as president. It's quite shocking.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, I mean, that's why I really focus on the underlying structure of settler colonialism and what it means, because, and, you know, I've discussed with you for years about algorithms, right, about the algorithms underneath all of that, which is, of course, what leads us directly back to this, because this is, these are the primary sort of, you know, directives of the colonization of Manifest Destiny, of my own homeland, you know, is the idea, are these ideas which Trump embodies, right, of white supremacy, white privilege, of, you know, of this sort of, you know, they're doing the progress is, you know, only possible and success if we are led by white people. All of that is just very embedded. It's, you know, like I told you, it's the origin story. It's the driver of what it means to be white and American. Right. And you saw Bad Bunny this weekend was reclaiming American for all the countries in the Americas, in the hemisphere. And I think I told you I studied under Elisabetta, she was a major you know, kind of confronting, she was reading these things on confronting white supremacy in the Bay Area, these classes. And when she always said that she thought that United States citizens should be called United Stations instead of Americans.
I always thought that too, because in Italy we're called Statunitensi, as an Italianization of Stati Uniti instead of, well, some people call us Americani. But yeah, I agree totally.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Can you repeat the name of that book that you brought up?
Yeah, it's One Nation Under Blackmail, The Sordid Union Between Intelligence and Organized Crime That Gave Rise to Jeffrey Epstein, by Whitney Webb. Can I just say one more quick thing?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you know, just following up on your thesis about the origin story and that the you know, the whole idea of organized crime. I've always kind of had this kind of unformed idea of nation states generally being like organized crime, especially ones that originated from colonization. And I think we need to look at that much more closely. It's kind of the understructure, the connections between, you know, whether it was George Bush Sr. or, you know, all these figures who keep popping up over and over and over again in the post-war period, they're connected to, or you know, it's all a form of organized crime anyway.
He was head of the CIA. Totally right. Yeah, thank you so much. I found the name of the book that I was mentioning. It's by Michael Benson. It's called Gangsters Versus Nazis: How Jewish Mobsters Battled Nazis in Wartime America.
Just one last thing. I don't say this is the book of all books, but this book actually ties together all those stories, all those post World War II scandals, Iran-Contra, the Franklin affair, and innumerable others. It ties the whole thing together. It's really the story of how of America, like pre-post World War II up to the present. Anyway, great show. The only reason I haven't been involved in KABU is I still haven't resolved this hip issue, which continues to plague me. So I just wanted to let you know that I'm not just playing hooky.
Yeah, I understand, and what you've been going through as well with, you know, your loss of your mom. My full sympathies and condolences for that. So,
all right. Well, thank you. Great show.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. Right. Thank you, Paul. That was Paul Rowland. He's been the host for years of this show, Wednesday Talk Radio. I was co-host with him once a month for several years, but he is taking a little time off right now. But he will hopefully be back soon when he's recovered, and so. Definitely had some good thoughts for him there. So, those were great comments, and definitely reading about sort of the history of this, of how we got here, why is there so much involvement with this sort of, use of things like, what we're seeing is, the blackmail operation, right? And so to basically, compromise, what it's called, to compromise leaders. And it seems like they're happily going into it, thinking they'll never be caught, right? And using the system, the judicial system and stuff to prevent any sort of legal repercussions or even public discussion of what's happening. So thank you for calling in, Paul. I'd love to hear more from all of you. Do please call in if you want to talk about all of these co-conspirators, and call the studio at 503-231-8187. And so we've been talking about what's in the Epstein files, and in these, particularly, I just got done discussing the emails from the Sultan, right? And the sort of trafficking that they seem to depict, right? To illustrate, and also something else that was in the Sultan's emails, which I found really kind of chilling, is that he discussed meetings with First Nation chiefs in Canada. American Indian tribes are called Native Nations are called First Nations, right? That's the term they use, And so he was. They were going to have this big, put out this big feast for him, roll out the red carpet for him, and here this is a man who is, obviously, is a predator, and they're bringing him to their reserves, right? In Canada, they call reservations reserves, one of my dad's cousins, he was a professor up in Lethbridge. University of Lethbridge in Alberta. He's a Yankton Sioux tribal member from here in the United States, but he's been active there in Canada for decades, and particularly on the issue of sexual abuse of minors, and really has been a major force in trying to have these issues discussed at the national level in Canada. And so I've heard for decades about these issues and the idea and how it's really been terrible for First Nations communities, the level of abuse that's been going on. And many of you have heard of the abuse that's going on in what they call residential schools, we call boarding schools, and just how these communities, and of course with the tar sands development and oil, that brought in a whole other group who began, these workers began, violence and trafficking of tribal members up there in the far north. And it's just been a terrible, terrible thing. So that they would bring in the Sultan, who is buddies with Epstein and discussing trafficking, is really scary. And it also made me think about my dad's tribe, the Yankton Sioux tribe. They opened a casino back in the late 80s, and they actually did partner with what I was told, and I can't confirm this, but the Italian mafia helped underwrite their casino. They managed to buy out, to pay them back within months, like within 3 months. And then they actually got rid of the Italian-American man who was the manager, I guess worked with that, those group of funders. And he sued the tribe for discrimination. But I mean, tribes are sovereigns, and, that didn't really work. But it made me wonder, in 2019, I was back up there interviewing on my dad's reservation after there was major flooding, and I was told by tribal leaders and members of the community about the level of addiction, meth addiction, and about this, that there was some kind of trafficking route going through my dad's reservation and from Mexico and I imagine other sources, and it was really horrific. I mean, I actually had the vice chair of the tribe tell me that people used to be really worried, really concerned about alcoholism. And I think I've shared before that my grandfather was an alcoholic, a graphic healer, and was later beaten to death by the police in a white town called Yankton, named after our tribe, but not on our reservation. And then now meth addiction, I heard, was over 50% in these communities, and even in my dad's hometown of Lake Andes on the reservation. And it was heartrending and shocking. And now I wonder is this tied to this sort of thing, bringing people with money like the Sultan or other folks into our communities, you know, hoping to develop them and then ending up becoming victimized by these predators. So just a thought I had when I was reading this sort of the Sultan sort of almost bragging to Epstein about how he was going to be, you know, fated by these leaders in Canada. Hi. Oh, so we have another caller, Santiago. You're on the air. Morning.
Good morning. I think that's a really important thing that both you and Paul have pointed out. And I think a lot more, especially in the time that we're living in right now with all the political unrest, you know, it's important to remember that like colonialism is organized crime. I mean, it's just the difference between what we consider like a liberal democracy. Our government is liberal democracy, and organized crime is just time. You know, there's so much distance that the United States has put between the atrocities of the genocide of our people and the enslavement of Africans that they've allowed themselves to coat their crimes in a veneer of enlightenment, which I always found interesting that the enlightenment. That colonialism and enlightenment happened at the same time, you know, and you know, in terms of how the Europeans viewed their influence in the world. But like, we have a group of people who are doing exactly what their forebears did. Trump is like Andrew Jackson. You know what I mean? Like, I always hate it when liberals start talking about Nazis. I mean, it's an apt description, but I think it's more apt to say that the founding fathers were as much Hitler as Hitler is. I mean, Andrew Jackson was one of the most voracious killers, genociders of Native Americans. And what's really disgusting about him that I find really connects to like a lot of the sort of like a bourgeois type of criminals that we have in our government is that he was born into wealth, drank and gambled away all of his wealth, and then won it all back killing indigenous people. But we revere him and we say, oh, he invented he was the purveyor of Jacksonian democracy. And it's like, democracy for who? And I just find it, because it's like right now we have a group of people, the Republicans, who are America. This is what America is and has always been behind the veneer of democracy. The only people to really experience what is happening now for hundreds of years, the only people who really experienced it were Black and brown folks and, like, queer and trans folks, right? But now the mask is off because they're finally attacking their own. And now now it's an emergency. Now it's an issue. But when it was us on the chopping block, it was like, oh, that's so sad. Oh my gosh, my heart bleeds for you. This is awful, you know?
Yeah.
And it just...
Or they're attacking the Second Amendment, which seems to have gotten a lot of the Republican base upset, you know, and stuff.
It's like when the Panthers and the Brown Berets and even like, you know, AIM were carting out their Second Amendment rights. That's when Ronald Reagan decided to do meaningful gun legislation. It's like we've only ever been citizens on paper. Culturally, we've never truly been accepted as much concessions as we've won through standing up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
it requires that, yeah.
Anyway, I think it's just fundamental to understand that America as a formation has always been an organized crime syndicate at its base, and then what I was going to say on the other side is that we have Democrats and progressives who are trying to say that this isn't America and that this isn't who we are, and that you know they think that somehow they can separate fascism from liberal democracy when it's exactly liberal democracy that gives birth to fascism.
I have a piece coming out in the San Francisco Chronicle that I wrote, and it's being edited. I was being edited yesterday by my editor, but I bring that up, the fact that, you know, people are discussing exactly what you mentioned, that, you know, that this is fascism, this is like 1938 in Germany. But I made the point that, hey, you know, the architects of fascism in Germany looked at the United States, the history there, particularly against Native people and the inequality of Black people, and looked at that, and they looked up to it, and it was an inspiration for them, right? And I just put that in my piece.
Yeah.
Well, it's not in my Substack piece, but yeah, exactly right. And I was really I'm going to try to write that down, what you wrote about, what you just said about being organized crime. I think that's an amazing statement.
Yeah, it's like people talk about the original 13 colonies. It's like, no, they were 13 corporations that were masquerading as a nation state. You know, they weren't. Yeah. They were people here whose primary motivation was extraction, and the reason why I always find it tough, you know, when white folks, especially well-meaning white folks, are like, I don't understand how we could end up back here after all the gains we've made. Yeah. Like, because we've never addressed the principal contradiction, is that, like, racism, militarism, and that all that, it all stems from like white supremacy and capitalism, in that, you know, the Europeans invented race as a means of differentiating themselves from Black and brown folks all over the globe, and gave them the ability to plunder. It was the planter class
that invented it, to divide poor white people, you know, indentured servants in Virginia, from Black folks who were being brought over to be enslaved. So that was where it actually came from, a desire to control the lower class. Do you know what I mean? Like giving them a little something to fight against other people in the same situation. So,
the point is that race as an invention, I mean, whiteness, I'll give you that. Yeah, that's a slightly different. Well, I think it really just depends on who was included, because in the beginning, white was only Anglo-Saxon, but you're right, they extended whiteness to indentured Irish because they needed to bolster their numbers. But I mean, essentially, like, I mean, that's how you get stuff like the doctrine of discovery, is that they gave themselves permission to come here, kill, rape, and destroy our peoples and our culture in order to create commodities that they could send back home. It's just, and we've never settled that. That contradiction has never been settled. We keep couching it in this enlightened language when we really truly underscore the brutality. And we, you know, it's like when they call us a nation of immigrants, it's like, we're not a nation of immigrants fundamentally. I mean, you can say that now because lots of people have moved here, but unless you have, like, settled the principal contradiction that this is a nation of rapists and genociders, if you haven't solved that or gotten rid of the things that produce that original contradiction, it will always come back to that, because they have that, because the white folks have that mythology to fall back on hard times. And, you know, the reason why a lot of us Black and brown folks fight is because we know that mythology is fundamentally untrue, and that, you know, and that it brings us no comfort when our people have been murdered and, you know, attempted to be murdered and destroyed in every generation. So I just...
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that's really well said. Thank you, Santiago. Yeah, you really captured that. I think, it's really, we're on the outside looking in, as I often say, of the house that white supremacy built. You know, they're inside, they don't know, but, you know, and they're shielded from the violence. Now many of them are seeing it in the streets of places like Minneapolis.
Yeah.
You know, thank you
the
so much.
The violence has finally come home, for sure. So,
yeah, thank you so much for calling in, and really, really great comments. So, and I just wanted to wrap up the section I just was discussing. As I mentioned in my Substack, the All Pueblo Council of Governors in New Mexico, tribal leaders, they are supporting House Joint Resolution 1 in New Mexico to create a truth commission to look into the Epstein Ranch, and they are refusing to let Native women be erased. As DEI statistics, which Trump has been deleting different initiative to document missing and murdered Indigenous people. And so that's been going ongoing as well. And you can read more about that in my Substack. I briefly, we have another caller I will get to soon, but I did also want to go over Lutnick. I many of you have heard, we mentioned it was earlier, that the man running our Commerce Department, Howard Lutnick, he's been for a year now telling anyone who would listen, including in a famous podcast last year, that he and his wife decided to, quote, never be in the room with Jeffrey Epstein again after a 2005 visit to his Manhattan mansion, their next-door neighbors. He called Epstein disgusting and said they cut him off then and there. But now these recently released files are showing that he's lying, right? The DOJ documents show that in December 2012, 4 years after Epstein was a convicted sex offender, Lutnick was not just in the room with him. He was on his island with his family, right? And Lutnick's wife was coordinating with Epstein's assistant to anchor their boat at Little St. James. And then under oath yesterday, Lutnick finally admitted it. He told his Senate committee, we had lunch on the island. That is true. And so he brought his own kids to Pedophile Island, right? And also, it goes deeper than lunch. The files reveal a 1996 property transfer where Epstein sold a townhouse at 11 East 71st Street, right next door to the building, the ones the Lutnicks were living in, to an entity that flipped it to Lutnick just 2 years later. And so, yeah, there's more into that, but let's get to this. Susan, hi, you're on the air.
Well, hey, I want to thank you for calling these folks out on their behaviors. I appreciate your callers calling in for their agreement that change is necessary. I hear that in their anger, and they're taking action to do that. And you're giving us wise counsel on how to take action. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. I thought of a book that you should be in. It's called Half the Sky, and it's just about investigations of abuse of women around the world. And it also just speaks so highly to your knowledge level and how it is impacting Indigenous people all over the world. So thank you for calling that out. And locally here in Oregon, I'm just so grateful for Representative Hartman.
Yes, definitely.
She was amazing in the legislature last year. She went to every single person in the Oregon legislature and asked them where they stood on issues of statute of limitations for child sex abuse and sexual harm, and they reached a unanimous agreement at the end of the legislature. And that's a way to use a government system against this stuff, I would say. You know, those that didn't want to vote for it actually voted for it in the end. And it wasn't just an issue of abuse against women, but children as well, and also men who've been violated by their babysitters, and all kinds of information that came out as the legislature themselves became more honest in their conversations. Thank you.
Wow, that's amazing. I'll see you at a show on that. Thank you for bringing it up here.
You bet. Thank you. Keep up the good work.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Well, and just to wrap up the Latinx section, we have about 4 minutes left now. He also was in business with Epstein. There was the Abfin deal. Documents from December 2012 between Lutnick and Epstein show that they were in business together and signed a contract on different neighboring pages to acquire stakes in an advertising tech company. So they weren't neighbors who didn't talk, right? They were actually co-investors while Epstein was a registered sex offender, right? And so, as I think Paul mentioned earlier, that, why isn't this causing the government to fall like it is in the UK, right? Lord Peter Mandelson, he didn't just lose his ambassadorship, he resigned from the House of Lords and the Labour Party, right? And yet we have the White House saying that Lutnick, quote, remains a key member of the team, right? And so Mandelson fell because he was filed showing that he was passing political nuggets to Epstein and allegedly receiving $75,000 in payment. And actually, this sort of action while he was a member of the government is actually punishable by 20 years in prison in the UK. So this is a very serious crime and really almost, anyway. So, we have Representative Thomas Massie told CNN this weekend that if this was Great Britain, Lutnick would already be gone, right? And Senator Adam Schiff and Jackie Rosen, they have had calls for Lutnick's resignation, and they aren't just calling the liar, they're asking why a man who did business with a child trafficker is in charge of the American economy, right? And So this is, another, there's just so many crazy aspects to this, but another one with the Zora Ranch thing is, of course, the New York Times reported in 2019 that not only is this sprawling fortress for evil in the heart of Pueblo Land, but the Epstein had a very chilling plan to seed the human race with his own DNA there. I mean, this is just insane. And so it's a very eugenics mindset, right? We've been talking about the issue of white supremacy and he shares this not only with these sorts of fascist folks from the early 20th century, but also pronatalist tech elites, who view the world as an paranullus, waiting to be filled in with their image, right? And of course, you see that with Elon Musk as well, with his plans to procreate, which he's been doing with multiple women, even women he just meets on social media, and sending and populating Mars, right? It's incredible, insane ideas, and with the 2026 release of Epstein Files, we're starting to see some real sort of evidence. Data behind these stories, right? And it's pretty scary. He planned to have up to 20 women. These newly released emails show that, and with interviews with top scientists as well, he was sort of collecting. He planned to have up to 20 women at a time living at the ranch, inseminated with his sperm to give birth to his children. And so he would talk to world-class scientists at his Manhattan dinner parties about this, he was obsessed with transhumanism, the idea that the wealthy could use genetic engineering with AI to evolve beyond the rest of us, right? So this is and of course he modeled this after his baby farm after the infamous Repository for Germinal Choice, a 1980s sperm bank that only accepted Nobel Prize.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM.
Hey, stuck in a slump? Sometimes you gotta shake it out. There's a time for everything,